Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Hey Yamud Aleph. Yesterday we discussed all the details of the captive property, putting up the three walls, the fourth wall, who's responsible, who put it up, was it the Makif or the Nikaf? And now we have case law that associates with that, and as we mentioned in the introduction, that Bava Batra is replete with case law because of the nature of the halachot that are found here. Now we have an example of this, which is Runya Akfe Ravina Me'arbaruchotav. Runya was encapsulated by Ravina's property on four sides. We actually bumped into Runya in Bava Metzia. Runya was actually the aris of Ravina. He was a sharecropper that worked for Ravina. Here the Gemara does not mention that, but later on when we get to an incident, it will become important, that piece of information, because we have a number of explanations for the Gemara at the end, one of which includes this idea that Runya was an aris to Ravina. Amrlei havli kama de gadri. So Ravina wants Runya to pay up for the fact that he put up a fence. Now again, this goes back to the machloket that we saw yesterday, whether the fence that Ravina put around was around his own property, all the way on the outer side of the property, or he put it up between the two properties. But either way, he was demanding payment from Runya for the fact that he put up this fence. And we paskin like Rabbi Yossi. And given that, he should have to at least contribute to the fourth wall, maybe to all four walls, depending on how you read the Gemara. Lo yaiv, he refused to pay. Havli li the fee to make kanim bezol. So he says, why don't you pay me based on a low-end, low-quality fence, which was one of the two options yesterday with regards to the machloki between Rav Huna and Chir Barav, as to when we do obligate you, how much do you have to pay? Do you pay the full value of the quality of the fence? Or do you pay for a low quality fence, the minimum amount that someone would put up to suffice in these situations? Lo yoivle, refused to pay. Havli agarni tiruta. So again, yesterday we saw that the lowest possibility of what you could pay to solve your problem would be to hire someone to sit there and guard the property. So if you're talking about a hierarchy, the most expensive would be a high quality wall. Then you'd have this, Demei Kanim Bezol, would be a low quality wall. And then the lowest quality would be to hire someone to sit there and chase away the animals and protect the field. Again, we noted yesterday that obviously times have changed where their human capital was cheap. And it was cheaper to hire someone to watch the field than it was to put up a fence, which today would be just the opposite, where in most likely scenarios it'd be cheaper to put up a fence around your field than it would be to hire someone every year to sit there and guard the field. By the time you have to pay for all their benefits and all their pension, you'd have to expend a lot more money on the individual that was there. So here, he asks him for at least that amount, some minimal amount. Lo yoivle. He did not give it to him. Ronya is refusing to pay or contribute at all to the walls that Ravina had put up. And again, depending on the scenario and the way that the Rishonim describe it, it sounds like over here that Ravina did this because he either wanted to separate between his field and Ronya's field, or he did it to protect his own field, but Ronya was a beneficiary of him protecting his own field. Again, we saw yesterday Rishonim arguing about whether the walls were there for Hezek Riya, or the walls were really there just for protection against people and animals coming in and destroying the field or eating the produce that was on the field. Again, the fact that you can hire a shomer leans towards the view that it wasn't for Hezek Riya. So that would lean towards, more heavily towards the idea that this was done for protection, not for Hezek Riya. Yom Echad Havaka Gadar Diklei. So here the word Gadar is used in a different way. It's talking about the harvesting of the dates. So Goder is the word that is used to describe the harvesting of dates. So he's Gadar Diklei. Ronya was out there picking the dates off of his palm trees. Amalei the Arisei. So Ravina says to his sharecropper, Zil shko mane kibura dahine. Go and grab or snatch a bunch of sweet dates. So that he wanted to make a point here, which was that once his aris went to take the dates, Ronya would get upset. And that meant that Ronya was benefiting from the fact that nobody could get access to here. So this is his way of showing to Ronya that he is a beneficiary of the fence that's there. So he tells his aris to go and take it, which then raises issues about how are you permitted to steal, how are you permitted to do this just to cause someone a problem. All the questions that would arise from this, the most likely idea is that he planned to pay for it, he even planned to take it. He just wants to make a point here that he didn't even have to take it. Just if he went to take it, that would have been enough. Azal Latuye, he went to take it, he had yet to take it. Rama Bekala, Ronya gets upset, calls out, screams out at him to leave his dates alone. What are you doing in my field? We had this in Baba Metzi as well, that Rame Beikala can also mean not just to raise your voice, but to throw something at them, to throw a clod of earth at the individual. But in some way, he indicated his displeasure with him coming in to take from his field. Amalei, so Ravina now says to him, Galita da'techa diminach nechalach. He says, you made it clear here that you really are a beneficiary of the fence that's there that's stopping people from coming in. Because you don't want people there and you want to make sure that your field is secure. So lo yehe iza ba'alma, let it be just a goat. Milo bayin itiruta, don't you need protection from the goats? So forget about it being a human being that come in here. Even if animals were to come in here, you'd have the same problem. So why are you refusing to pay for the wall, or at least contribute towards the wall, when it's clear here that you need that benefit? You would have to protect your field. Like here, where somebody's walking over to take it, so too, if the goats came in to take it, you'd have the same problem. When it comes to goats, you just have to make a little noise and they take off. And that goats aren't hard to deal with. They're not a type of persistent pest that's going to come along and cause me problems. I don't have to pay a lot of money to protect against these goats. All I need to do is make a little noise, scream at them a little bit, and they'll go. Amalei, velo gavra bait de michlelo. Don't you have to hire someone to scream at the goats? Don't you have to have someone there that does that? It's not going to work just with the scarecrow. You're going to need to have somebody live that's there. And that's what I had asked you for. At minimum, pay me for the shomer that you would have to hire to put in place over there. Ate the kami de Rova. He finally took him to din, and he brought the case before Rova. Amarlei, Rova says to Ronya, Zil paise b'may de ifais. Go ahead and try to placate him with what he was willing to accept. Ve'ilo, because if you don't, de'ina lacha dina k'ravuna aliba de Rabbi Yossi. Otherwise, I'm going to pass an alocha like Rav Huna according to Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi is from our Mishnah yesterday. Rabbi Yossi is the one who says that when you put up the fourth wall, then we obligate the party to pay for the whole amount. That's number one. Rav Huna was the one who said that you have to pay the full quality of the wall. Whatever quality wall was there, you have to share 50% in it. Unlike Chiya Barav, who said that you can pay a minimum amount, but you say, I would have put up a low quality wall. So Rav Huna says you put up a full quality wall. So I'm going to go paskin like Rav Huna, leave it to Rabbi Yossi. And then you're going to be really out a lot of money. Here he's willing to accept either Dmei Kanim Bezol, or he's willing to accept Agar Nitiruta, Shomer's salary. And the real halacha, it seems, is that the halacha is like Rav Huna, aliba de Rabbi Yossi. And that both Rashi and the Balei Tosafot say over here, Michlau de Hochi Hilchata. Over here, this isn't just a threat or an empty threat. That is the halacha. And he's telling him, Ravina voluntarily offered to take less money. So you're better off taking that compromise than coming to the din. Now, had Ravina not said anything, he would have had to paskin against Ronya and force him to pay the full amount. But since Ravina had already volunteered to take less, and he showed that he was willing to take less, he gives him advice and says, take up the offer that you got, because otherwise, if I paskin the halacha, it's not going to go in your favor. And so therefore, they both conclude that this is the halacha like Rav Huna aliba de Rabbi Yossi, even though Tosafot does speculate that maybe he was just doing it to cause him to be afraid, which we find in the Gemara in Sukkah, and in the Gemara in Baba Metzia, we saw with Rabbi Tarfon, by the Tagrei Lod, where he threatens the Paskin like Rabbi Tarfon. So over there we see that there are times in Shas where there will be a Dayan that's willing to push the envelope in terms of halacha in order to gain the acceptance of what is the halacha. So he threatens the Paskin like a much more machmir opinion in order to get the results that he needs. So Tosfot speculates along those lines, but then comes back and says he thinks that Rashi's right, that over here that's not the case. Over here, that was the real din, and he was just telling him that take up the better offer, because otherwise I'm going to paskin aliba de hilchata. Now here comes the second story, which is not necessarily related to our Gemara. It's actually related to the Gemara in Baba Metzia. Gemara in Baba Metzia deals with the din of Bar Metzra. Din of Bar Metzra is that if you are an adjacent property, and the person goes to sell it, you have a first right of refusal to buy the property. And now, this is the story that comes up with Ronya and Ravina. And because it's about them, it's also included in the Gemara here. So Ronya Zaman Ara Mitzra de Ravina. Ronya purchased a property on the border of Ravina's properties. Sava Ravina the Sluke Mishum Dina de Bar Metzra. Ravina has a right of first refusal to remove Ronya from here because it's adjacent to his properties. And because of Asita Yashar Vatov, he has a right, because of Dina de Bar Metzra, to say, I want to take this property. Amrle Rav Safra Breda Rav Yeva the Ravina. Amre Inche. So here we have a cryptic statement which says, Arba'a Litzala, Arba'a Litzlalala. That's all that the Gemara says. We will now go through about five different interpretations of what this means. Rashi brings three. The Baal HaTosef will bring an additional two explanations. And there are other Rishonim that offer other variations of this. The first one that Rashi says over here is, when it comes to Arba Litzla, the Arba Litzlalala, is that it's referring to a Ratzan. A Ratzan is a leather worker. And it says that a Ratzanani and a Ratzanashir, both of them need Arba Kikarot. They both need to feed their families. And they both need sufficient means by which to feed their families. Their basic needs are the same. So whether you're rich or whether you're poor, you still have to earn this minimum amount in order to feed your family. And so therefore, what he's saying to him is, listen, Ronya, just like you, needs to feed his family. Ronya is somewhat impoverished. You, Ravina, are a very wealthy individual. So you can exercise your right as a bar mitzvah to take the property. But in the end, Ronya needs a means or a way by which to make a living and to have a field. So why not let him have the field? And, k'shem sha'ata omer tzalek me'alai bedina de bar mitzvah, the same way you say, what's your right to the field here? It's because of bar mitzvah, because of asita yashar v'atov. Kach ani omer lecha, asay yashar v'atov la'ani. Then, in the same manner, there's also an opposing side, or a mitigating factor, which is, do the yashar v'atov to the poor person, zeh v'al tisalkeyu, and do not remove him. So Rashi's first interpretation says that the whole reason for bar mitzvah is vasita yashar v'atov, to do what is right and just. So yes, you are entitled through asita yashar v'atov to this property. But on the other hand, let's look at the situation. Ronya is this impoverished individual. You're wealthy. And if you take this property, by where is he going to make a living for his family? So why don't you do asita yashar v'atov and allow him to take the property and make a living and have a way or means by which to make a living? Rashi says that's the first explanation. V'yesh l'gam game. He's not comfortable with it. Da'or karu itzala v'lo ratzan. His rejection of it is on the language basis, not on the idea, but the fact that the word tzala refers to the leather itself and not to the leather worker or the leather maker. Therefore, he offers up a different interpretation, which is that this is a low margin business. And that's what he's saying over here, that when you have arba litzala, arba litzlalala, means that this is the amount of money that you have to give in order to have the leather ready to be sold. And therefore, he's making a very thin margin on this item. And since he's making a thin margin on this item, you should vasita yashar v'tov be lifni mishrut adin and let him keep the property so that he can actually make something. Here's an individual who's making very little. So give him an opportunity to make for his family and to provide for his family, because he doesn't have alternatives like you do. You're a wealthy individual. You have all these other alternatives or means by which to make a living for your family. And the mashal is, just like the leather worker makes a very thin margin and works very hard, so too, here, Ronya works very hard, but makes very little. If you at least give him property, that'll give him access or the ability to provide for his family. Sebasita yashar v'atov. And then Rashi brings a third interpretation, which is, Lenira, dala d'tzala, dala kikaro tzarich labdan ani, v'dalach d'tzala k'mokain, tzarich abdan ashir. So he says that it doesn't matter whether the abdan is wealthy or poor, they both have to make the same outlays to process the leather in order to have it ready. Your wealth is not a decisive factor in what you pay towards having the work be done. Umashalhu keneged Ronya, she'elo sadeh achat, betof sadot shel Ravina. That Ronya actually had this one field amongst the fields of Ravina. And we said before, because Ravina was all the way around, he encompassed him on all sides. And now he bought a property on the border of Ravina. So now, when he buys the property, Ravina's property is sitting between his two properties. And now, Ravina wants to exercise the Sita Yashar V'tov to keep the outer property, which is adjacent to his properties. So he says, at least give Ronya some ability that he can take that property on the outside. even though they're not directly adjacent, the fact that he has two properties that are close together still affords him scale. And that's what he says over here, that scale matters when it comes to farming. And therefore, if he can at least buy two fields that maybe aren't exactly adjacent, but they are close together with Ravina's property intervening, he still will benefit from that. He might be able to hire one person to guard both fields. He might be able to work one field and then move over to the other one quickly. He does get value from the scale of having the two fields be in the general vicinity together. And so that's what Rav Safra is saying to him. Listen, for the Ani and for the Ashir, there's still a value here. You both pay the same amount. And here too, the Ani and the Ashir, the adjacent property, even though it's not exactly adjacent, there are benefits of scale that apply to both. You, Ravina, of course, there are benefits of scale because you're directly adjacent. But for Roni as well, there are benefits of scale because even though he's not directly adjacent, he's captive to your property. But on the outside, there's still value in scale. And so he calls the Ronia the Ani and Ravina the Ashir. Both of you have scale benefits. And therefore, don't exercise your right as the Bar Mitzvah from Asita Yashar V'Tov, because V'Asita V'Yashar V'Tov is actually on the other direction as well. There's a mitigating side to that, which is Ronia does get benefit from having the field be nearby or in the vicinity. So those are three different ways that Rashi proposes as to what the explanation is over here. But all of them rely on a basic factor, which is V'Asita V'Yashar V'Tov, that there are two sides to the coin in all these situations. And just like you're exercising your right because of Asita V'Yashar V'Tov, there should be an opposing side to this, which is Ronia. You should try to benefit Ronia because of the fact that he has Asita V'Yashar V'Tov, because he's impoverished versus you who are wealthy. Right, so then you move on to the Balei Tosafot. The Rabbeinu Tam asks a question which is fundamental, and he says, the Perush HaKuntres Makshe Rabbeinu Tam, Ha'ein Merachamim B'Din. He says, what's going on over here? When it comes to Din, Din and Rachamim are not two areas where you combine. Emotions and mercy are not the rule of law. Emotions, yes, may be appropriate to have, and it's appropriate to act that way, but if you're coming to a Beit Din and you're asking for a Psak Halach, or the Din is that you're entitled to as a Bar Mitzvah to take the property, why do you have to be Merachim B'Din? Why do you have to have mercy B'Din? This is the rule. You can exercise your right under that rule. You have a right of refusal. So if he has the right and he wants to exercise it, why does he have to desist from exercising his right? Now, there are two things to say about this. One of which I'll just make as a side point, that the Grua with regards to benching, in many benchers, you know that in the third bracha, Uvnei Yushalayim, the bracha ends, Baruch Ata Hashem, Bonei Brachamav, Yushalayim Amein. In many of the benchers, the word Brachamav is in parentheses. And that is because the Regra was in objection to saying Brachamav. And that is based on the fact that in Yishayahu Aleph, which we read, Tabat Chazon, over there it says, Tzion b'mishpat ipadeh, and there it says also that Yerushalayim will be redeemed through Tzedek u'mishpat and through Din. And that the redemption of Yerushalayim comes through Din. And therefore he says it's inappropriate to say Bonei Berachamav Yerushalayim, because it has nothing to do with Rachamim. It has to do with Bonei Yerushalayim is Mitzad Adin. If people act appropriately and carry out justice inside of Yerushalayim, then Yerushalayim will be redeemed. And it's the same type of question that here is being raised by the Rabbeinu Tam, which is that the ideas of Rachamim and Din are not necessarily consistent or reconcilable. So that's just as a sidebar. The second thing is, I'm not sure that Rabbeinu Tam's question is so strong over here. Rabbeinu Tam makes the assumption that Vasita Yashar V'Tov is a Din. Now, even according to the Ramban Ala Torah, who we read in the introduction to the Masechta, that Ramban, when he says Vasita Yashar V'Tov, is still indicating that it's Lifnim Yishurat Adin, it's the spirit of the law. Yes, laws derive from Asita V'Yashar V'Tov, but still conceptually, Asita V'Yashar V'Tov is this amorphous law that depends on what the right thing to do is. And therefore, even though it is the din that Bar Mitzvah has a right of refusal, still it's governed by the overarching principle of Asita V'Yashar V'Tov. And therefore, I'm not sure the Rabbeinu Tam's question is rightly placed to say over here, well, if that's the din, why are you having Rachamim? Because this din derives from that fact. Asita Yashar V'Tov means when you can do good, why do bad? And so over here too, if you consider the circumstances of the situation, you'd also want to do something for Ronia, not just do something for Ravina. But given that, he comes up and offers a alternative shot over here, which is that the Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here, Ronya bordered on the field being sold on one side, and Ravina bordered on the field on three sides. So now, Ravina wants to exercise his right as a bar mitzvah, because he surrounds the field on three sides. On the other hand, Ronya has only one connection to the field. Ronya bought it, and Ravina comes in and says, I'm a bigger bar mitzvah than Ronya. He only has one side, I have three sides, so he wanted to exercise his right to take it. It looks like they are two captive fields inside of Ravina's property. One that belongs to Ronya, and another captive field that is adjacent to Ronya's field. And in that way, you could have Ravina surround him on three sides, and Ronya be touching him on one side, because we know that Ronya's field is totally captive to Ravina. Then how does he have a meitzar? How does he have a border with anyone else? So what you would have to suggest is that there's another captive field next to Ronya's, and because of that, he shares one border with that field, but Ravina shares three borders with that field. And then, Amalei Rav Safra, Rami Inche, Arba Litzalala Perush, Lo'or Gadol Tzitzei Liten Abdan Dalet Zuzei, V'dala Litzalala Or Katan, Komar Tzitich Liten Mina Katan Komo Mina Gadol. So he says, when you go to give it to the leather workers, or the tanners to work with the leather, size of the leather doesn't really matter. He has to make the same expenditure and the same work to work a larger hide as he does to do a smaller hide. And therefore, they charge the same amount, irrespective of size. And what Rav Safra is saying back to Ravina is, it doesn't matter. As long as you are a bar mitzvah, as long as you are a boarding property, that doesn't matter how many boarders you have a right then as a bar mitzvah. And therefore you shouldn't be coming along here and indicating that you have more rights than Ronya. You have no more rights. He's a bordering property, you're a bordering property, and he sold it to one of the boarding properties. And we already said in the Gemara Bava Metzia, if one of the bordering properties bought it without the knowledge of the others, then the no right to exercise bar mitzvah, because what's done is done. So same thing over here. Ronya already bought it. And yes, he had a right because he was an adjacent property. And you don't have any more rights just because you have more adjacencies to the property. So that's one way to suggest it. Or he brings then the Rabbeinu Avraham. Perush dach ara dezavin Ronya ametzra derminu hainu ametzra deotan sadot she Ronya arispehen. This comes back to what I said earlier, that Ronya was an aris. He was a sharecropper. And he bought a property that was adjacent to the properties in which he was a sharecropper. Now Ravina comes to exercise his right as a bar mitzvah to take the property, because he owns the property adjacent. And Rav Safra's answer to him is, no. As an aris, as a sharecropper, he has equal rights to you as an owner. Since the sharecropper works on the field, and the idea of having adjacent fields is because of scale and economies of scale, the same benefits that would accrue to a property owner in adjacency would accrue to an aris that has a property that he owns in adjacency, because then he can work both of them together. And therefore, Ravina mistakenly thought that he did not have a din of bar mitzvah. And Rav Safra comes along and says to him, no, that he does have a din of bar mitzvah as an aris. And that's what it means, arba litzlala, you pay 4 zuz to purchase the leather, and then you pay another 4 zuz to have the leather worked or tanned. So the two are equal. The material itself and the one who works with the material get the same price. And so that's what he's saying here. The aris and the owner of the land both have the same rights over here. So that's a fifth interpretation or possibility as to what Rav Safra was indicating to Ravina. So Rashi's explanations generally follow this idea of Asita Yashar V'Atov is more amorphous or flexible. And Rav Safra was saying to him that you were trying to exercise a right under Asita V'Yashar V'Atov, but then you're missing the Asita V'Yashar V'Atov, which is to help out Ronya. If I consider both of those matters, then I would not let you exercise that right, because you have another obligation to help out Ronya from Asita V'Yashar V'Atov. The Tosafot, based on the question of Rabbeinu Tam, sees this as being a mistaken approach of Ravina to suggest that he had a right and Ronya didn't have a right. And in both cases, Rav Safra is coming along and telling him that's not true. By the case of the Rabbeinu Tam, he's saying to him, I have three sides, he has one side, I have more rights than him. And Rav Safra dispels that and says, no, he has equal rights to you. And in the case of the Rabbeinu Avram, who says that he was an aris versus an owner of property, again, Ravina thinks that the aris doesn't have the rights that the owner of the property has. And the answer in the end was, no, he has the same rights as you. So Rav Tosfot sees it as a mistaken reach by Ravina in terms of Bar Mitzvah, whereas Rashi sees it as a proper exercising of his right, but in context of the bigger picture of a Sita Yashar Batov, it would be improper to do it. All right, next Mishnah. We already are familiar with the Mishnah because we quoted the Mishnah earlier in the Gemara, but the Mishnah says, Kotel Chatzer Shinafal. You have a wall within a chatzer, a courtyard that fell down. Mechayven oto livnoto. We obligate the parties to replace the wall that fell down ad arba amot, until the height of four amot. Four amot, by the Mishnah and by the Gemara, is determined to be the minimum amount you need in order to protect against hezek ri'iyah. Because four amot would exceed the height of any individual. And by doing so, you've protected against hezek ri'iyah. So when the wall falls down, we don't know how high the wall was, but we at least, at minimum, make both parties join to pay for arba amot, because then we restore the utility of the chatzer to the way it was before. Before there was a wall here that gave us privacy, and now I've restored the wall to that level, which is arba amot. The way the Mishnah is written is that one party wants to do it, the other party is not necessarily a willing participant. My chavinoto is that we obligate the other party to pay, I mean both parties need to pay. B'chezkat shenatan, ad shevi'raya shelo natan. The assumption is that both parties pay until we get evidence to the contrary. So Rashi says over here, that's because nobody is going to lay out money when they know they have a legal right to get the money from the other party. So over here, I'm not going to put up a wall and put out all the expenditures and then try to collect the money from you when I know I could just walk to the court and I have a right then to demand the money from you and make you participate up front. So therefore, since nobody would waive their right to exercise this legal right, and it's a well-known legal right, and we assume that the other party paid, and both parties participated, and we don't assume that he laid out the money and now is trying to collect it unless he has evidence to the contrary. Midala maut and lemalan, from four amot or higher, ein mechayvinoto. We will not obligate the party to participate. So up to four amot, we will obligate him to participate to replace the wall that was once there. To exceed four amot, even if the previous wall was higher, we will not obligate him to do so. Samach lo kotel acher. After the individual, they built the wall jointly up to four amot, and then one of the two parties decided he wanted it higher, and he put in the monies to raise it to the level that he wanted, or to the level that the previous wall was. Then the party that refused to pay for the excess height goes ahead and builds an adjacent wall, a parallel wall to the wall that separates between the courtyards. Even though he has yet to put a roof or some sort of covering over it, we force him then to pay for it. Because this is similar to the case in the previous Mishnah, which is that he, by his actions, makes it clear that he likes what was done. So over here you have a wall that's four amot high, and then the other guy raised it another two amot, made it six amot high. Then the party who refused to pay for the additional two amot builds a parallel wall that is six amot high in his property. The obvious reason he's building that wall is then to put bamboo or put something across between the two walls. It's clear that he built the other wall to utilize the existing wall. Once he does that, he makes it clear that he wants that wall there and that he's a beneficiary of the wall that exists. At that point, we force him then to pay for it. And there, b'chezkat shelo natan, ad shevi'raya shenatan. Over there, we assume he did not pay for it until he brings evidence of the fact that he did pay for it. Because there's no legal right to demand that he pay for it. And even in the case where he builds the wall parallel, not everybody knows the din there that you have to then contribute because you're making it clear that you wanted the height of the wall. Before, you only had to pay for four amot. Hakol means now we're going to make him pay for 50% of the six amot. Now, Tosfot over here says, Airi, kigon di adina de kadam chad ba'artze de chavrei. Rashi over here says that there has to be no previous interaction between them, but just the assumption is that this guy comes along and says, I put it up the extra amount, the other guy refused, and now he wants to get him to pay for the two amot extra. We assume he didn't pay for it. Tosfot says the only time we assume he didn't pay for it is if we already have evidence of the fact that he refused to pay for it. If we knew already that the first party asked the second party to pay, and the second party said, I'm not paying for the extra amount, then he's under this chazakah that he didn't pay. But had he never had any interaction, it would not be true. Then we would assume that they both contributed equally to the wall. So Tosfot has a higher threshold to determine that we assume he hasn't paid. And it has to be that we have indications that he already refused to pay. And then, now we're coming to court and he says, I paid. Then we're not going to believe him. But if it's up front, he said, I paid, then we would believe him. Rashi says, even in that scenario, we wouldn't believe him because Wait, guy says, I put it up by myself. He only was willing to pay for the 4 amot. I put up the 6 amot. And then he has to give evidence of the fact that he paid for the extra amount. Tosfot says over here, why does he have to pay for the extra amount? Because we have a principle, zenene vizelo chaser. And that's what's happening over here. You were under the 6 amot wall anyway. And you were going to put it up. So the 4 amot, we force you to share. Then you put up an additional 2 amot by yourself because your neighbor refused to pay for it. Then the neighbor goes ahead and puts up a 6 amot wall high, and he's going to use it to run a roof between the two properties. In the end, you wanted a 6 amot wall, so that's a lo chaser, you were going to pay for it anyway. He now is benefiting from the fact that you put up the wall. Zenene, vizeh lo chaser. Why should he have to pay at all for it? Why do we force him then to contribute? So Tosafot gives two answers to the problem. One is that in this case, you can't say zenene vizelo chaser in a situation where he is also a beneficiary. Kevin de galidate de nechle bagbat chayav. Since he indicated or he has given evidence to the fact that he likes the extra height, then we make him chayav already. When you say zenene vizelo chaser, that's only when there was no previous possible obligation to pay for whatever it was. And now you enter into a situation in which you become parties to each other, and this is one party is nene, and this one's not chaser. But if you already had a previous relationship in which there was a demand for payment and you refused to pay, you can't then exercise your right to establish a relationship of zenene vizelo chaser. That's the same with the fields before in the previous Mishnah, where when he puts up the fourth wall and he refused to pay for the other walls, we still megagalin over to kol because even though zenene vizelo chaser, it's still, you had a previous relationship where there was a demand for payment. In that case, you can't call it zenene vizelo chaser. That's one answer that Tosafot gives. The second answer he gives is inami hachya ze chaserhu. In this case, it is a chaserhu. Shegoreim lo shegbiakol to lamala midalamot, kadei shelo yo hezek riya b'shum inyan memono. Tosafot says that hezek riya doesn't end at 4 amot. Tosafot now has a concept called enhanced hezek riya. The truth is that 4 amot takes care of the majority, or normal hezek riya. But, to really get rid of hezek riya, to be sure there's not going to be any hezek riya, you need to raise it higher, and you have to bring it up to 6 amot. Who is the cause of that problem? Who's the cause of that hezek riya? Is the party, your neighbor, on the other side. So your other neighbor was the one who caused you to have this chisaron, to have to build the wall higher. So because of that, you can't just call it zenene vizelo chaser. Because it was a chaser, the chaser was that he had to build the wall higher because of you. And that is the chaser that is here. And therefore you can't claim it zenene vizelo chaser. So that's a fundamental view that Tosafot takes over here, which is that beyond 4 amot is still a problem of hezek riya. And when you build above that, there's still an enhanced hezek riya that is being prevented. And therefore you can demand payment once the other person indicates that he has some value from it or he wants the wall at that height. And so for that reason, it's not called zenene vizelo chaser. So Tosafot gives two answers to the problem, why it's not zenene vizelo chaser. Either it's because they have a previous relationship that already indicated that there was an obligation to pay that he walked away from, or he declined to pay, then you can't claim all of a sudden afterwards zenene vizelo chaser. Or the second answer is that there is a chisaron here caused by the other party, which is the fact that you have to build it above 4 amot, was also a result of the neighbor, or he was the one who was causing that chisaron, and therefore you could demand from him to join in the payment. Now, Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish tries to establish a broader principle over here, and Alocha is like him, which is a koveh azman lechavero, person who establishes a fixed time payment for his friend, ve'amar lo piraticha, betoch zmanei, if the loveh, the borrower, comes along, the debtor says, I repaid the loan before the expiry date. Einu ne'aman. He is not believed. Olavai shi'ipara bizmano. We would just be hopeful that they pay on time. And people who take out debts and have to repay the debts, they don't repay the debts early. They repay the debts on time, and they sometimes not even on time. They say we'd be lucky if they just paid on time. Forget about paying early. And therefore, you do not have a ne'amanut, a believability if you say you paid it within the time frame in which the loan is not due. And that means that we say that a person always waits to the last moment to repay the debt. Now, Tosafot over here claims that when Reish Lakish says, Koveya zman lechavero, that's only literally where there is a due date. There is a default due date, which is a stam loan is extended for 30 days. Tosafot says that that 30 days does not have the same din as a due date. And therefore, if a person claims that he paid it back early, when he just borrowed money without any due date, he is believed because there is really no toch zmano. We don't view the 30 days as being a real due date to determine that which is before as being toch zmano and add afterwards as after zmano. But 30 days is just a generic window, but it does not have the same weight as a true due date. In addition, Tosafot over here says that the case must be a case where there are a deem to evidence the fact that the loan is outstanding, as well as the fact that there is a particular due date. And that's what obligates the individual over here. If he says, I paid back early, is because we have evidence of the fact that there's an outstanding loan. If there's no a deem to the outstanding loan, then Tosafot claims over here that it is a migo, that he should be believed. The Re, in the end, rejects the migo and says that's not true, because the migo would apply on the day or the due date, which is that here he's standing on the due date and saying, I paid you early. The migo would be that I could have just said, I paid you today. But Tosafot says, Mali the Shaker, people don't lie about 2 hours ago or the same day. It's not going to say, oh, I paid you an hour ago. People don't lie about that. What they say is, I paid you yesterday, I paid you a couple of days ago, and you forgot about it. Because there they feel comfortable lying about that. Nobody's going to lie and say, I paid you back an hour ago, because that's not something that is tenable, or a person's mistafina, he's a little afraid or embarrassed to make a claim where it's clear the person's going to remember what he's saying and he knows that he's lying. And therefore, the Re says it's not even a migo over here, and therefore, if that's the case, you wouldn't even need a deem to evidence the loan, even if there's a claim for the loan and a due date that is not denied by the loveh, that would be enough evidence that if he says, I paid it back with toksmano, we would not believe him because of the fact that he doesn't have a migo because he's standing on the due date. And they have a chazak of Reish Lakish that people don't pay back early. Bai v'rova damrei tarvayu. Bai and Rova, on the other hand, disagree and say, avinish depara begozimne. People do pay within the window of time that they have. Even though they have a longer window or the expiry date has yet to be reached, they pay back the debt early. Zimnin dimitrami leuzuze. Sometimes they come across some money. They have a windfall, they have a good business deal, or they get liquid cash. Amar izel ifrei, let us go pay for it, keichadol litardan, so that we don't get bogged down. Now here you can interpret litardan means so that we're not stuck with this outstanding debt, we get rid of this burden that is on us. Or lo litardan means that we don't get stuck at the due date trying to scramble to raise the cash to pay back the debt. But either way, people sometimes want to just get the debt off their back, and therefore they want to discharge the obligation early. That's the view of Abai Verova. It's interesting that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah also deals with a concept that is similar, which is with regards to holidays of Avodah Zarah, that you're not allowed to repay a loan within a certain time frame close to that holiday, and you're also not supposed to accept payment, a repayment of a debt from a debtor towards you before the holiday. Because in that case, both parties are happy. In the case where you repay the individual who lent you the money, he's going to be happy, he's going to thank his Avodah Zarah because he got his money back. The loan was repaid. The other way around, and this is an important part of it, is that when he repays the debt, why should that be a problem? The answer is that people celebrate when they have repaid the debt, or when they have discharged the obligation. Used to concept of burning the mortgage, when you pay down your whole mortgage. But that idea exists, that when a person completes paying the debt, they have a certain amount of celebration to discharging that obligation. In the end, the Gemara over there has an alternate Tana who says that just take the money, because you never know if you'll have the money next time, so you better take the money. But the concept is there, which is that there's a certain amount of joy in repayment of a debt or discharging the obligation, and people will do that early to get that burden off their back. So that's the view of Abai Verova. Reish Lakish disagrees, and he says here there's a chazaka, people don't pay back early. Now the Gemara wants to challenge that from our Mishnah. It's none. B'chezkat shnatan, Ajaviraya Shalonatan. Our Mishnah says that there's a chazaka that you paid until there's evidence to the contrary when you have to jointly pay for the wall. Hey Chidami, what's the scenario? Ilay Madamale Piraticha Bizmane. If he says, I paid you on the due date, I paid you when I was obligated, Pshita Bechezkat Shatan. Of course he gave the money, or he's believed that he gave the money. Why should there be any question? That's like someone saying to him, Mane lebi adecha, you owe me 100 zuz, and the guy says to him, Parati, I paid it back. Why is one party believed over the other party? They both have bari claims. They're both saying something that makes sense. He says, you owe me money. The guy says, I don't owe you money. I paid you back already. That's the same thing over here. If he says, I paid you on time, then there's no reason not to believe him. Elalav de Amarle, isn't this scenario in the Mishnah where he says, Peraticha b'toch zmanei, I paid it back, or I paid you during the time before the due date. You put up the wall, and you wanted me to join in that expenditure, and Beit Din, or you gave me a deadline to pay for it. I already paid for it before the deadline came. Alma, from our Mishnah, then you would conclude, Avininish depare b'toch zmanei, that people pay back before the due date. Because over here, he's saying, I paid you, and he's believed that he paid him, even though the due date has yet to arrive. Marseh, shiny hocha. Over there, it's different. The chosafa v'safa zimnehu. It's different when it comes to construction. Construction is a staged process. And therefore, when you have construction, it's true today as well. There are certain milestones along the way, and you make payments along the way for the construction. So you can't say that there's a due date. After the construction is complete, there's this one due date. No. As each layer is being put on the wall, that's the due date for that layer. And therefore, it's not that he paid b'toch zmanei, he's paying it early, because it's already due. As soon as you put up the row, then that money is due. I mean, he might have given him more time to the end, but the money's already due, and therefore it's not considered to be toch zmanei anymore. Tashma, now the latter half of the Mishnah. B'chezkat shelo natan, ad shevi raya shenatan. You're under a chazaka that you didn't give it until you bring evidence the fact that you did give it. Hey, chidami, what's the case there? This is for the additional that he builds above the four amot. Ilema damarle peraticha bizmanei. If he says, I paid you on time, amailo. Why isn't he believed over there? Again, when two people make a claim that have our equal standing, why would we believe one over the other? Elalav damarle peraticha bitoch zmanei. I paid you back before the due date. Alma, from this you would conclude, lo avin inish depare begozimne, that people don't pay before the due date. So again here, that would be supportive of Reish Lakish's position, whereas the ratio was supportive of Abaye and Rava's position that people do pay early, and we rejected that because we said construction is a staged process, and therefore it's different. Over here, the latter part of the Mishnah seems to support Reish Lakish, that we don't believe someone when they say, I paid it before the due date. It says, Shani Hocha, Damar miyemar demechayvu li rabbonon. Who says that the rabbonon would be mechayev me? There's one thing when you have an obligation that is outstanding that you know you're going to have to pay. In that scenario, people will pay early to discharge the obligation because they know with absolute certainty that the obligation exists. In certain scenarios, you're not certain of the obligation. Like here, he's not sure he's really going to have to pay for the extra amount. He thinks that he has a good legal standing not to have to pay for the extra amount. The two extra amount that he put up when he built the wall next to it. So over there, he thinks that he has a legal right not to pay. He will not pay until the court paskins that he has to pay. Because he doesn't think he's obligated. He won't front the money and give him money and say, oh, I'll go get back in court. When someone thinks they don't have to pay, they won't pay until they're absolutely obligated. And that's why over here, he doesn't pay early. We don't believe him because he's not thinking that he has to pay in this case at all. Since he doesn't think he has to pay, he's not going to pay early in this scenario. So now, over here, the Baalei HaTosafot raised issues that we actually raised in Bava Metzia. This came up in Bava Metzia with regards to two issues. One is Bechor. That's what the Gemara in Bava Metzia brought in terms of a proof of whether people pay early or don't pay early. Do they prepay or do they not prepay? The Gemara brought the example from the case of Bechorot. In the case of Bechorot, you have a due date which is 30 days. That's when Pidyon and Bechor takes place. So now, in a situation where the father passes away, we assume then if it was prior to 30 days, we assume then that he didn't pay it. If it was after 30 days, we assume he did pay it. So now, why isn't there, over there, we say that here he knows he's got to pay it. Pidyon HaBen is something that you're going to have to pay. It's an obligation that he's well known and well documented. Why don't we say over there that he does pay it early? How come the Pidyon Bechor is different? We also talked about schirut, the same thing with regards to rental. Why do we assume that a person doesn't prepay the rental when he knows he's going to be in the rental for the year and he has to pay it anyway? Maybe he prepaid it as well. So the Baalei HaTosafot over here, but more importantly in Bava Metzia, with regards to schirut, come to the conclusion that that's not true. People will not prepay their schirut because there's risk to their rental. The risk to their rental is, number one, if the house falls down. If the house falls down, then he's not going to be renting there anymore, so he doesn't want to prepay because then he'll have to get the money back. Number two is, if the landlord's house falls down, remember the Gemara in Bava Metzia, the landlord's house falls down, he can push out the tenant and say, I can live here because I lost my house. Rashi said that's only true at the due date. The Baal Yad Tosafot over there said that even the middle of the term of the lease, you can say, you're out, and I'm coming to live here because I have no house. So then there's no reason to prepay in that case because you can lose. He could be kicked out of the house in the middle of the term of the lease. That's how Tosafot answered the question with regards to the lease. In terms of the Bechor, so the Baal Yad Tosafot give two reasons why by Bechor people don't prepay. So the number two answer that he gives is what you were saying right now, is that who knows, and it's not an absolute obligation. If the child passes away before the 30-day mark, you won't have to pay for the Pidyon Bechor. It is not as certain as you think. That's why we're waiting 30 days, actually, is to make sure that he's a Bar Kayama in the first place. So that's number one. Number two is, Tosfot says, it's Mamon She'en Lo Tovim. It's money that has no claimant. Even though the class of Kohanim as a whole have a claim for the Pidyon Bechor, no individual Kohen can come and make a claim against him. And therefore, it's very hard to have a court-enforced order for him to do the Pidyon Bechor because there's no Toveya, there's no claimant over here. So Tosfot says for both of those reasons, we don't assume the person prepays. Number one is because there's no real claimant over here. And number two is that it's not certain that he will have to pay for it. So that's how Tosfot unwinds both of those issues vis-a-vis what we say over here. Over here we say that if the guy knows for certain he's going to have to pay, he will pay early. Tosfot says those other cases, there's not certainty. There is uncertainty in both of those cases, and that's why you don't have to prepay. So this is why this sugi is brought over here. So the Reish of the Mishnah seem to be evidence in favor of Bayin Rava, and the Seifa seem to be evidence in favor of Reish Lakish. In both cases, we dispelled it as being evidence because these are unique cases. Rav Papa of Ravuna, Breda Rav Yeshua, Avdei ke Abayi v'Rava. They paskin like Abayi v'Rava, Marbar Rav Ashi, Oved ke Reish Lakish. On the other hand, Marbar Rav Ashi, who is in the 8th generation Amoraim, he's on the latest Amoraim, he's a Batra, he did like Reish Lakish. And the truth is that we paskin like Reish Lakish. Tosafot goes through for other reasons why it might be evidence that we paskin like Reish Lakish, because there are only certain times where we paskin like Reish Lakish, and this is not enumerated as one of them. And therefore he believes that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Asi and other Amoraim agree with this position of Reish Lakish, and therefore the halacha is like Reish Lakish over here, that there is a chazakah that people do not pay early. How strong is that chazakah? So the Gemara says, v'hilchata k'Reish Lakish, the halacha is like Reish Lakish, v'afilu meyatme, even from Yitomim. In general, we have a principle, v'afagav damarmar, habali para minichse Yitomim, anybody who wants to collect an obligation from the Yitomim, the orphans, after the father had passed away, lo yipara elu b'shvua, he has to take a shvua. But the chazaka here is so strong, chazaka lo avi inish depara b'gozimne. There is a chazaka that people will not pay early, and therefore, he does not have to take a shvua over here. This is an exception to the rule because of the chazaka of Reish Lakish. So first of all, we establish halacha is like Reish Lakish. Now, once we establish halacha is like Reish Lakish, this chazaka is so strong that the normal rule with regards to Yitomim is that you cannot collect from Yitomim, Elim Kain, you may take a shvua, unless you take a shvua substantiating your claim over here. And say you haven't been repaid, and not only then can you collect from the Yitomim the outstanding debts as you as a creditor have towards their father who passed away. So what we are saying over here is if the father passed away before the due date of the loan, and now the person comes with a contract evidencing the fact that he had an outstanding loan, he can present that and then collect without having to take a shvua, because the Chazaka Reish Lakish says that the loan was not repaid early. Since the loan was not repaid early, we can assume that it was not repaid at all, and he has a right to demand the repayment of the loan from the Yitomim without having any substantiation of the fact that he wasn't paid yet or that the father did not repay him. That's how strong this Chazaka is. And after the father passed away, the due date comes, and he's going to the Yitomim, he says, I want the debt repaid. Normally, we would ask a creditor to take a shvua to say that he hadn't gotten his money yet. But because the due date only happened after the death of the father, we assume the father did not repay it because nobody pays early. And therefore he doesn't have to take a shvua to substantiate his claim. That's how strong this chazaka is vis-a-vis Yitomim, which who normally, we don't let you take anything without a shvua. Here, we'll let you take it without a shvua because of this chazaka. There is a machloket rishonim here along the lines of what the question that you're asking, which is, when does he come to collect? Some rishonim believe that he comes to collect on the due date. He's coming on the due date to collect from the Yitomim. The Yitomim say, maybe our father repaid you. He says that your father could not have paid me because he passed away before the due date. There's no way that he paid it. And that's why you're obligated to pay. Others suggest that he came even after the due date. If he shows up and says, I want to be repaid. Your father passed away before the due date. You owe me the money. You should pay it. So it's other Rishonim suggest even if it comes after the due date and the Yatomim are just make a claim that their father might have paid it, that's not a claim because the father passed away before the due date. And the earlier Rishonim don't agree because the Gemara is about to deal with the issue about after the due date. It has yet to deal with that. And therefore they don't want to introduce that earlier in the Gemara. And so they say here he's coming to collect on the due date. Now Tosfot over here also qualifies and says the Yatomim over here have to be Yatomim Gidolim. That they have to be Yatomim that are of age. And the reason is because Priyat Bachov is a mitzvah. Generally, repaying one's outstanding debts is a mitzvah. Yatomim who are below the age of bar mitzvah are not b'nei mitzvah. Since they're not b'nei mitzvah, we're not going to obligate them to pay for it. Or, even according to Rav Huna b'Rabbi Yeshua, that says the reason is that we're worried about tzrarei, we're worried about monies that were already taken early, because we're afraid that the father gave him money in a pouch beforehand as repayment or to hold on to in case he didn't repay the debt. And so therefore we want him to take a shvua to indicate otherwise. Over there again, the yitomim ktanim are problematic because you have to do something in front of your bal din. Whenever something happens, you have to do it in front of the counterparty. The yitomim ktanim are not considered to be a valid counterparty. And so because of that, you can't then take payment. So Tosfot says here, the Yitomim that we're speaking about are Yitomim Gidolim. They have to be of age, because if they are minors, you can't take the property to wait until they become Gidolim and then make your claim at the time that they became Gidolim. So Tosfot limits the right here to Yitomim Gidolim, whereas there are other Rishonim like the Rashba who say that you can even make a collection from Yitomim Kitanim, and there's no limitation over here as to which type of Yitomim we are speaking about. And again, the Chazak of Reish Lakish is what's giving you a right to collect without a Shvua. Ibailuhu. So here's the question of Achar Zmano, and that's why some Rishonim are reluctant to say that he came to make the claim Achar Zmano before, which is Tiva'o la'achar Zman. He comes after the due date to claim the money. V'amar lo piraticha b'toch Zmanei. But the debtor says, I paid you back during the time, before the due date. So now his coming to collect is after the due date, but the debtor says, I repaid you before the due date. Mi amrinan b'makom chazaka, amrinan mali l'shaker. Do we say that there's a migo? A migo is mali l'shaker. If I was going to lie, I should have had a much better lie. Why is it worth me lying this way? I should have lied the other way. Do we invoke a migo when there's an offsetting chazaka? So I look at the scenario here. The chazakah is that you don't pay before the due date. Now he's coming after the due date, and he's making a claim to the debtor. The debtor says, I repaid you. Had he just said, I repaid you, he would have been believed. Because after the due date, we assume that the debtor did repay it. And so and he paid it on time, and that he's repaid the debt unless there's evidence to the contrary. So if he had said it then, he'd be believed. So now, when he comes along and says, I repaid it before the due date, then does he get nemanut because he could have made a better claim? He could have just lied and said, I paid it on time. Instead, he tells the truth and said, I paid early. Is he given nemanut, or is the chazakah so strong that if you say that before the due date, I paid it back, we would never believe you because of the chazakah of Reish Lakish? That chazakah is so strong that even after the fact, the migo does not give you nemanut. It's the equivalent of what we know in other places of migo versus edim. That amigo doesn't help you when you have edim coming and testifying that take away those options. If you have witnesses that take away the other option, we don't say that you're neman anymore. Amigo can't go up against edim. The Gemara's question is, can amigo go up against a chazakah over here? Do you have the ability to be neman even though there's a chazakah offsetting your nemanut? Is the chazakah stronger than the edim, or is it not as strong as the edim, and therefore does the amigo work in this scenario? Odilma. But Malkum Chazaka, lo amrina, mali l'shaka. When there's a Chazaka, we don't say or invoke a migo. Those over here ask the question, Miksha, Rabbi Mordechai, v'chazaka difa mishtar. He says a Chazaka is better than a shtar. Ushtar ino govel abishvua. If you show up to the Yitomim with a document that shows you owe us, you owe me, your father owed us money, you can't collect from the Yitomim. Elin ken you take a shvua. You show up with a Chazaka, you can take the money from the Yitomim without a shvua. So it's absolutely clear that your chazakah is stronger than a shtar. What's the value of a shtar? The shtar's strength comes from the edim. So a shtar is the equivalent of edim, and a chazakah is clearly stronger than a shtar. So why is the Gemara even having a question here? If with a shtar we know that you can't have a migo against the shtar, then why can you have a migo against the chazakah? He says the answer should be so obvious to the Gemara. So Tosfot Omeri Delo Kashaklal Devadei Edim Adifa Mechazaka. He says that you're getting one prat where a chazaka is stronger than Edim, but generally Edim are much stronger than a chazaka. And in this case, the reason you need a shvua with a shtar is because there is no evidence in the shtar as to whether it was repaid or not repaid. The shtar only brings evidence to the outstanding nature of the debt. It does not tell us whether it was paid or not paid. But then you have this other claim, which is advanced by Rami Bar Chama, which is you have to take a shvua because shtar chabi yodi, my boy. What's the shtar doing in my hand if it was repaid? And Tosafot concludes that maybe this sugya is not following that position of Rami Bar Chama, and therefore you can't prove anything about amigo b'makom chazaka from the all of these offsetting issues where you're trying to determine whether you need a shvua or don't need a shvua by a shtar. And therefore Tosafot says he doesn't think that it's an automatic answer or it's obvious over here. The Gemara says, Tashma. Now the Gemara is going to go through exactly what we just went through before from our Mishnah. Bechazka shenatan, ad shevirayah shelonatan. The first half of the Mishnah says that he's bechazaka, that he paid, unless you bring proof to the contrary. Hey chidami, what's the case there? Ilei mishnah tiva ola achar zman. If he comes to make the claim after the due date, v'amar lo praticha bizmanei, and he says, I paid you on time, pshita, of course he's believed. Why wouldn't we believe him in that case? It's one versus one. Elalav damarle praticha b'tok zmanei. Isn't the answer, he comes after the due date to claim the money, and he says, I paid you before the due date. Ama afilo b'makom chazaka amrinan mali l'shaker. Here, it's after the due date, we say mali l'shaker, and given nemanut to say that he paid it before the time of the due date. Where it says, no. Shani hocha d'chos safa v'safa zimnehu. Over there, like we answered before, every moment is the due date. And therefore, there's no betoch zmano anymore. There's no paying early because every day was a due date because he built another row on the wall. And every day is a due date. That means it was due already. And when he claims that he paid it, then it's believed because he paid it. Tashma, midala motu l'malei mechim inoto, samach lo kotel acher, the safe of our Mishnah, ad shevi raya, shenatan. He is not believed until he brings evidence to the fact that he paid. Echidami, again, what's the case? If it's a case where he made for claim after the due date, and he says, I paid you on time, am I low? Why isn't he believed? Ella, lav d'amarlei piraticha b'tok zmanei. He responded that I paid you before the due date. He's coming to make a claim after the due date, and he says, I paid it before the due date. So over here, the chazak is stronger. We don't believe him. We don't say that he's ne'aman when he says that. Even though he could say, I paid you now, he wouldn't be believed. But nevertheless, when he says, I paid you before the due date, we do not believe him. Shani Ocha, again, the Gemara answers the same way it did before. Damar mi yemar de mechayveli rabbonon. Over there, he has something working against him, which is, there's not certainty to the payment. Nobody pays early when there's no certainty to the payment. And over here, he doesn't think there's certainty to the payment, so we don't believe him when he says, I paid early, when the obligation was not obvious at that point in time. Amalei Ravacha braid the rabba Ravashi. So then, Rav Achabrei the Rabbah says, Rav Ashi Tashma, I have a proof that will be conclusive about this, which is, Mana libi adecha. He says, you owe me 100 zuz. Amar lohin. He says, yes, I do. He admits to the fact that he owes the money. L'machar amar lo tzneuli. The next day he goes, come and pay me back. Im amar nitativ lecha. If he says, I already paid you back. Patur. If he says, in lecha biyodi, chayav. If he says, I don't owe you anything, then he is chayav. My love. So what's the scenario here? Nitatich lecha, when he says that I gave it to you, damalai praticha bizmanei, he says that I paid you on time. Ein lecha yadi, when he says you have nothing against me, damalai praticha betok zmanei, that I paid you back early. What's the difference between the language that says that I paid you back versus ein lecha yadi, you have no claim against me? So the Gemara's Havamina now is the difference between them is when you paid it back. When he says, I came to the due date. He says, I already paid you. Nitativ lecha. I paid you already because it was after the due date and I paid you. If he really paid him early, before the due date, then he says, Enlecha biyodi, you have no claim against me because I took care of it a long time ago. That's what we're saying is happening over here. And then what do you see? Amo b'makom chazaka lo amrina mali l'shaker. There we see that after the due date, he's saying I paid early and we don't believe him. Even though he could claim I paid now and he would be believed, but if he says I paid early, he's not believed. Lo, that's not what the way to read it. My in the chabiyadi. What is in the chabiyadi? That's the more obvious way to read it. Lo ayu dvarim meolam. There was no such outstanding debt. Damar mar, kol omer lo leviti, komer lo parati dami. Any person who says that I didn't borrow the money also is saying that I didn't pay it back. I mean, that by definition, if you are denying the fact there's an outstanding loan, you're also denying the fact that you repaid the loan. So now over here, he admitted the first day that he owed the money. On the second day, they come to make the claim for him, and he says, there was never an outstanding debt, never happened. Then the guy brings in a nadim that he admitted the previous day to the effect there's an outstanding loan. Now all of a sudden he can't claim I repaid it. Because when he said there's no outstanding loan, that's the equivalent of saying I didn't pay it back. Because if you don't think there's an outstanding loan, you're not paying it back. So anybody who says, well, leviti, I didn't borrow, is also saying I didn't pay it back. And in that case, he will have to pay it back. So the reason he's not Naaman is because of the nature of his claim. If he denies the debt entirely, then it's clear he didn't repay the debt. And that's why he's got to repay it. On the other hand, if he simply says, I repaid you, then he could be believed. The same way that he admitted to the fact that he owed the money, he also now is telling you that I repaid it. And he will be believed in that case. But if he denies what happened before, and he denies the loan entirely, then it's clear that he didn't repay it. And when we bring evidence to the contrary, that he owes the money, then he's got to pay, because he can't make a claim of parati. He can't say all of a sudden, well, it's really like what I was saying. That's what Tosfot says over here. When I said that lo yudvarim olam, in my eyes, it was as if there was never a debt outstanding, because I repaid it already. Now, you can't say that. That's what it means, that kol omer lo leviti, gomer lo parati dami. So again, here we have no more evidence to whether the migo can override the chazaka, or the chazaka is stronger than the migo. We'll stop here by the two dots in the middle of Amud Aleph.